Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Score! This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
You know what? Brad Pitt, you're a good actor. You're a movie star. You're more of a movie star than a great actor. And that's okay, because you're in really good movies and I enjoy them.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big Ann Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Anthony Heron's on Twitter at Big Ant Herron. Works for this very radio station as well as Fox 32 and the Big Ten Network and more. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Man, these are fascinating times, Anthony Herron. We saw the Bears not overthink those top two picks and take two potentially outstanding football players. What do you make of the rest of the draft and how it looks in its entirety?
Well, I got to say, what you referenced, Dan, just as far as the excitement surrounding the top couple of picks that the Bears took, I got to be out there on Thursday with Fox 32. Lou Kanellis and I were at a desk. BJ Moore joined us before the draft started. We had about 90 minutes of coverage at the fan fest that they had out there at Soldier Field. And, you know, the juice that was there in the building, you know, Jeff Joniak, he's certainly never shy about leaning into Bears excitement.
No.
And as, you know, kind of composed and controlled a personality as DJ Moore is, talking to him specifically about Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, being around them, working out with them beforehand, and just being out in L.A. together. I got to say, that started to get me a little bit worked up about things too, man, just because it's there's been a squad. And I've talked to both of you about this before. The arc that this team has been on over the last few seasons, you know, I've been on teams that have lost a bunch of games. I've been on teams that have won a bunch of games. When you've gone through the process of sort of slogging through struggle together, and now everyone can tell that they're on the cusp of, you know, potentially being something much more formidable than we've seen in years here in Chicago. Everyone is prepared for this moment. And at least right now, it seems like, man, things are going according to plan.
I was telling Dan, the only like tinge of was this the best right answer I have is the fact that they did draft what I think was the best available. But knowing what a difference an offensive tackle can make out of this class, alts off the board, I understand that. But there are still some viable, really quality available linemen. And I just wonder, given that they already had two receivers in place, if it was the best of the good decisions. And there's no way to know. I'm not mad at it. It's just where I sit with it.
And that's where, as I was discussing this a couple of weeks leading into it, the idea that maybe Roma Dunze could be available to the Bears at 9. As I was asked about it, the term I used was gluttonous. You know, by comparison, if Joe Alt was available there and you had the potential to get that, to at least get deeper at tackle, if not upgrade at left tackle, then that's something that to me would have been worthy of consideration, if not definitively going in that direction, because it is, by comparison, I would say more of a position of need. Because I think if we were in a position to assume health for all five starters, which we're not, but if the entire starting offensive line stayed intact, then I think that's a good group and probably an above average group, depending on just, you know, the offensive play calling and some of those types of things that would help accentuate the strengths of the group up front. But then beyond that, they're just so thin. There's no legitimate depth to really be confident in. And the majority of them have missed significant time. Darnell Wright played the entire season last year at left tackle. He missed over a month. Left guard, he missed, I don't know, he's missed the majority of his career so far at Tevin Jenkins. We don't know anything about the centers yet because they're both just on their way in here. Nate Davis had personal issues and injury. He missed a bunch of time for. So, yeah, the O-line is still very much worthy of concern, as is the D-line, and having another legitimate pass rusher is going to be able to play either opposite from or alongside Montez Sweat. So to me, the line of scrimmage was certainly a direction that would have been worth looking. It's why my guess going into it was that if Rome Odunze wasn't there, my guess was that the Bears were going to trade down. I might have told you guys that last week. But with Rome Odunze being there, he's the main talent that was actually on the board at 9 that I definitively viewed as being worthy of a top 10 pick. I mean, I'm very fond of Olu Fashanu from Penn State. I don't think value-wise, he's someone that I view as some sort of a definitive top 10 pick, but he's got the highest ceiling of any offensive lineman, certainly any offensive tackle in this draft. So I thought if Odunze wasn't there, trading down would have made sense. But you got a guy of that caliber who's there, sitting, waiting for you at 9, and you compare him with this quarterback who he's already begun developing a rapport with. You've got an offense that has the potential to look like very few Bears offenses we've ever seen.
Well, that's it for me. It was that Olu Fashanu was available. You, being an observer of Big Ten football, understand what he was bringing to the table. Before, I'd say probably what, mid-season, he was still considered the likely first offensive lineman to be taken in a draft.
Right.
Things change. I get it. It's fine. But when you know that that's still a possibility, I mean, these are the good problems to have. There's no doubt about that. But it does,
right.
It is going to make me wonder. The only way to correctly predict that difference is a crystal ball, right? I mean, that's it. You're not, this isn't one of those glaring discussion pieces, but that's the hard part for me, is knowing what I saw last year and saying how much of that was on quarterback and how much of that can be prevented in a long-term way with a good line.
And he's a really, Olu Fashanu, an extremely mature young individual. Could have come out last year as a 20-year-old. Now he's 21. And so, you know, he'll enter the NFL and go into that New York Jets space with his, you know, all-time great quarterback who's a head case. But, you know, the focus of the media will be more so on Aaron Rodgers than on anything happening with Olu Fashanu. And the Jets, you know, they've been really banged up on the offensive line and just playing bad. But at offensive tackle, they did bring in a couple of veterans, one of them Tyron Smith. So Olu Fashanu would be in a position where he could potentially step in there and maybe even move to the interior, possibly, because I do think he's got enough ground-based power to make that move if they chose to do that. But if nothing else, he'll be initially a depth piece, and then as soon as one of those veterans get hurt, he'll be able to step in at left tackle. And just his physical attributes are beyond anyone else at his position in this draft cycle, and you know, perhaps even the last couple of draft cycles here. I mean, when Tristan Wirfs came out of Iowa a few years ago as a right tackle, as far as just the explosive athleticism and straight line speed and the power he played with, you know, he was one of those guys who, you know, the physical attributes were just sort of off the charts for an offensive tackle, but he was more definitively a right tackle coming out. Olu Fashanu, a surefire left tackle at some point in the league. So I wouldn't have been mad at all about the Bears taking him, but where he'll be at day one in the NFL, then that's where, you know, I would have said Rome Odunze, that's a day one playmaker in the National Football League, no doubt. Olu Fashanu, a guy who should be able to quickly develop into someone you can count on as a starter. But Joe Alt, the more finished product between the two, much higher ceiling for Fashanu, though.
I am loath to ask a former Iowa Hawkeye about their cult hero punter, but I must do so anyway. Do the best you can to be as objective as possible with a fourth-round punter.
So Robbie Triano was producing the show when I was on Saturday, just kind of wrapping up everything that happened in the draft. And while I was on the air during the third day of the draft, the Bears end up selecting with the fourth pick, as Brad Biggs had predicted. They end up going ahead and taking Torrey Taylor. And, you know, I've covered every punt of his Big Ten career. One of the things that's probably a little bit underappreciated when we evaluate all these different Australian punters that end up entering the National Football League, certainly the ones who've dominated college in recent years, they don't all make a smooth transition to professional football, because in college, you're allowed to do the full Australian rules rugby style sprint from one sideline to the next punt. You can't do that in the NFL. And so the transition that Torrey Taylor's made is actually pretty exceptional, where he's one of these guys who grew up playing Australian rules football and doing everything rugby style, kicking with both feet and all the coordination that's required in that just as an athlete. That's impressive. But he has been in his career at Iowa, they haven't been utilizing him in sort of, in some ways, manipulating numbers by just doing these rugby style kicks that bounce all over the place. He's in the pocket in Iowa City doing your traditional American style punting and dominant in doing so. And then also you add in the fact you both joke with me about the Iowa offense, the struggles that have been there over the last couple of seasons. So there's not another punter in college football that's been as effective under the duress that Torrey Taylor's been under. I mean, you know, punting from his end zone, punting from inside the 10, punting in tight, hotly contested games with division championship implications, and still being able to Hawkeyes, getting the defense to take the field with a field position advantage. I mean, not even just, you know, booming the ball to shift the field, but consistently pinning the opponent, not just inside the 20, but it became an expectation when he would take the field at Kinnick to pin the opponent inside the 10, at least frequently inside the 5. You know, my old teammate LeVar Woods, he was on the station yesterday talking to Espo about it a little bit. I mean, what Torrey Taylor did in Iowa City, you know, it's hard to revolutionize punting, but what he did as far as becoming this cult figure, T-shirts being sold, punting is winning, raising money for it on the side, and the Australian accent doesn't hurt. You guys know part of the reason everyone fell in love with Liam Hendricks is just because he really just sounded so cute when he talked to. This city is going to adore Torrey Taylor before he ever steps foot on a football field.
I had a feeling, especially with the...
So I didn't get the objective report. I got the subjective report.
Well, and the embedded Iowa love that just exists in the city. This seems like a decent match made. I also just want to ask you what you think about the overall approach in getting the offensive line depth they did get, in getting another draft pick they trade back in, and they get some defensive line depth. I know that's something that concerns you too, just seeing how they're going to build this team with the line concern. You know about defense, of course.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, this should be another top 10 defense regardless, just because of what they're capable of on the back end in the secondary, you know, how versatile they are at linebacker. And yes, it's a good run fit defensive line with one exceptional pass rusher. As of right now, no one else is a proven pass rushing commodity. So that's what can really take this defense over the top. That's where you've got, you know, 2018 Bears potential, when you can truly get after the quarterback. I mean, think about the way we were discussing Matt Eberflus, how his defensive philosophy was described when he first came in. Like, all right, he's a cover two guy. He's lovey. Doesn't like to blitz. It's really vanilla. To his credit, to get them at their best last season with limited pass rush, he did dial up the blitz pressure a lot more than we're accustomed to him seeing. I'm still under the impression that's not his preference. That's not where he believed his defensive philosophy is best suited. He was just able to adjust on the fly, and I think he deserves some kudos for that. But in the end, if the Bears can't rush the quarterback any better than they have the last couple of seasons, then yeah, top 10 defense can still be something that has you in peril when you're playing the best offenses in football. So if there's a veteran running the street who you sign him to a prove-it deal and hope for the best, I do like that they at least went back into the draft and got Austin Tucker. We've seen them take flyers on some guys in recent years, and as much as I've talked a good bit about the lack of offensive skill development, and there's been a number of defenders who've been drafted who've played at a reasonable level, at times a really high level, as they've developed here. In recent years, we haven't necessarily seen a true young pass rusher developed and begin to flourish in Chicago. So I'm not going to say it's you know, something that's organizationally of concern. But again, you know, we do the, you just got to get the right guy, you got to find your guy, your diamond in the rough deal. Development is such a big part of that. And yes, my focus personally has been a lot on that at quarterback. But when you really evaluate the, you know, DeMarcus Robinson types of guys who the Bears, even go back to Leonard Floyd, man. I mean, he was a decent player while he was here in Chicago. But as a top 10 pick, they drafted him to be a pass rushing menace. He never turned into that in Chicago. So it'd be nice for the Bears to really develop some young homegrown guy into a high level pass rusher.
We're talking with Anthony Herron on the Bernstein and Holmes show. Layla Rahimi in today. There's so much polish on these kids. Like, not just the first rounders either. There's so many are seem ready for this. And it just doesn't seem that long ago that a lot of potential rookies, a lot of draftees were a little more overwhelmed and blinking in the bright lights. Is this just more attention paid in high school? Is it the combination of how NIL has put more players in charge of themselves and to be more invested in the way they relate to media, or, you know, 750,000 people or whatever they said was there off the stage in Detroit, these ridiculous numbers? I'm just these kids today seem so grown up, Anthony.
There's a lot that's sort of baked into that gumbo. You know, there's the ability for them all to sort of control their own narrative with their own social media outlets, having access to doing that. And so in some ways, you know, they kind of begin building their own little media opportunities just through themselves, through what they're doing and posting on social and the various, you know, conference TV networks that, of course, have been started over time. And, you know, some of the outlets that you have access to with that, they get a lot of exposure there and just get accustomed to addressing people on the camera and having this pseudo professional sort of presentation to how they operate. And so they're more accustomed to it now than ever through elements like that. But in the end, a lot of it is just within the DNA of certain guys also. You know, I mean, Mitch Trubisky played at a Power Five institution. He was only a 1-year starter though, but Mitch never really got comfortable in front of the media and on camera and seemed at times overwhelmed by it. Now, Justin Fields, of course, was as ready to handle the pressure of being a Chicago quarterback as anyone we've seen. Just the actual production at the position for him, his development just didn't, you know, happen and mature at the rate that was necessary for the Bears to pass on this opportunity. And then you have Caleb Williams, who combines some of that, you know, very similar Justin Fields type of DNA of just being ready for the scrutiny while also having a, you know, a game that is also very prepared for the big moment. Like JJ McCarthy is as mature as anyone. You know, he ends up getting drafted as the Vikings trade up to 10 to get him. Folks on this station and around the city have talked about JJ McCarthy a lot, but the game of JJ McCarthy isn't nearly as evolved as the game of Caleb Williams. You know, I was talking to Hub about it when Hub and I were on together on Saturday. You know, JJ McCarthy was Hub's number one QB. Part of that, yes, the intangible, very, very impressive with JJ McCarthy. The game itself is still so raw. And he did struggle at times. You know, he struggled against Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. He struggled in the national championship game. Michigan won in spite of some of the games where JJ McCarthy, not only did they not let him throw the football, he struggled at times actually throwing it when the opportunity was there. So he's an immensely talented guy who is ready to handle the media, who's going to work his tail off to maximize all of his gifts. So I think he'll eventually become a great pro. But for him to be nurtured on the field is going to be important. But he's one of these examples of a guy, though, who, yeah, it was good for him to sit as a true freshman. And then we saw both the maturity, the camera presence, all that readiness you talk about, that evolved pretty quickly for him. Whereas a Michael Penix Jr., when he was at Indiana, a little bit more of a shy, reserved personality to some extent. He gets out to Washington, and he's the Heisman front runner, and he's throwing all these touchdown passes, even though the media scrutiny in Seattle isn't nearly what he'll deal with in the National Football League, but he's just had more time to prepare for that moment. So, yes, there's a number of reasons that we see these guys more prepared now for the harsh glare of expectation than we ever have before. But then, you know, you'll still have the aspect of once they're at a podium after a game where they've struggled or where things aren't going well or the city's just upset about something else and they start taking it out on them, it'll still be a very different scenario than most of them have ever been in.
We'll have more with Anthony Herron when we come back. I have a couple specific questions about Caleb Williams and what we're going to start to see or not in rookie minicamp, in OTAs, etc., where we're actually going to find out what they're going to do to make sure they get the most out of him. That's next when we come back on Bernstein and Holmes. Layla Rahimi is here today on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Caleb just texted me before saying, hey, you're not going to punt too much here, which is great, but...
The Bears are a different organization than they were when we woke up on Thursday. Everything's different.
Yeah.
And the Bears are cool with that. So as we talk to Anthony Herron here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, I am interested, Big Ant, in the early signs that the Bears are adapting to a player rather than forcing a player to adapt to them. You know the stories we used to hear about, like when Peyton Manning went to the Broncos, and Manning had he had all kinds of sway, and he just said, "Look, here's how we're running practice. Here's where I need the cameras because I need film of practice behind me to see where some of these throws are coming out." Like, to what extent early on? And a lot of this is going to be the variable that is Shane Waldron, but are they going to say, hey, Caleb, what do you need? What do you have to see? What is going to make you the most ready and comfortable to get the most out of every rep?
I think it's a worthwhile question. I do, and it, you know, it's come up in a few different ways here, especially with quarterbacks in general now having a more almost NBA vibe to the way they operate. We're kind of seeing that transition happen in football where there's a lot more agency from players. It does still tend to be players who are more proven commodities at the professional level, you know, where Russell Wilson, after he's been to a couple of Super Bowls, won one of them, you know, Seattle starts to reshape the way that they operate and the way that they allow him to operate after he's a made man at the professional level. So my old school sensibilities are still comfortable with that. You know, I won't shudder at the idea that the Bears don't have Caleb walk in day one and just start, you know, sort of readjusting what they've already begun to build here. But that being said, I think a level of personality, being comfortable with that being shown, and an individual at quarterback, the type of individual he is, you draft Caleb Williams, because you know you need to be ready for and comfortable with that type of agency over his image. But as far as just how things operate day in, day out in Halas Hall, whether it is schedule and practice and, you know, which teammates are here and there, you know, things like, you know, that veteran QBs that made men who've won a lot and accomplished a lot in the NFL, that you start hearing about them being allowed to do, I still err more on the side of allowing a lot of that to be earned, even if it's earned quickly once you're watching him flourish on the field.
But what does he have to do? Like, have a great practice? Like, fine, now we'll do things your way. What do we actually mean when we say these things?
I think he's got to start winning some games. The expectation. But, you know, once he's winning and he's playing and he's looking comfortable, and frankly, that he's not abusing in any degree of agency or deference. And again, I think part of this goes to, you know, like when a few weeks back, whenever it was, when Jalen Johnson was on with Kay Adams on the Up and Adams show, and, you know, he was saying like, well, you know, you can't bring the Hollywood stuff in here. I don't even think he was necessarily claiming that he felt like Caleb Williams is definitively Hollywood, quote unquote. My impression of that is that Jalen Johnson is basically saying, like, there's a lot of guys who've been building a way of operating here. And so we want anyone who comes into it to be a part of that, not above it, not beyond it, not thinking there's anything wrong with it. And every indication I've seen in the time he's been more in the public space here in recent weeks, where everyone else has gotten to know and be around Caleb. But frankly, everything I'd heard from folks at USC about Caleb Williams was that he's cool with that. He's going to want to be himself, and he doesn't want to have to change himself for anyone who's around him. But I don't necessarily think Caleb is the type that will come in looking for other people to sort of bend to his whim very much either. But just because he really hasn't been, you know, this sort of outwardly public boastful figure until we finally saw him in Indianapolis at the combine, and everybody said, oh, he's a human. Like, he's kind of normalish. Okay, that's fine. We can get behind this. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. And that's part of what DJ Moore was telling me on Thursday over there, was that Caleb had a million questions. He was very inquisitive. He was really eager and just easy to be around. And I think there's going to be a lot of that. So I think the game of Caleb Williams, I want to see that Shane Waldron, that's my biggest scrutiny with Shane Waldron, because that's been my big issue with Bears offensive coordinators for the last few regimes here. You got OCs who haven't been shaping the offense to their talent. That's my thing with Shane Waldron. Are you going to look and evaluate what Caleb is capable of, what your O-line is best at, and put the offense in a position to succeed? Like, Luke Getsy may go on and call good plays for Las Vegas because he's got a quarterback that suits him there. Who knows? My biggest issue with him here was that he didn't do it in Chicago. So that's my thing with Shane Waldron. You know, all the painting of the fingers and crying and anything else that Caleb wants to do on the field, is Shane Waldron putting him in the best position to succeed? He's got to be able to evaluate that aspect.
Yeah, preach. Like, Luke Getsy just didn't work here. That's why they decided to fire him. People seem to forget that part of it, but that's exactly what happened. It's not like he decided to leave the team on his own.
Yeah, exactly.
He was fired for cause. I like the fact that you brought up what Jalen Johnson said, because let's face it, a lot of our job now is having to add context to things that are purposefully taken out of context by people.
Right.
And the important part of how he said it, to me, was not something you wouldn't hear in a locker room. Like, any locker room, you would have somebody say that, especially given the position that Jalen Johnson is now in. He got paid.
Jalen Johnson's going to be on the Parkinson Spiegel show today, by the way.
Nice.
That's super handy for us talking about the nerve center of the football space for 670 The Score. Mm-hmm. But also, he's saying that because he's just protecting the don't come in here and think you can run things. We do have a team group here. I didn't think it was him saying don't be yourself. I thought that there's a good reason to clarify what that truly means. Like, he's saying don't run things. You already saw that with the number. He didn't want Keenan Allen's number. He wanted 18.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of that, where he's showing a willingness to be deferential, he's so approachable, just being out and around with fans in Detroit and, you know, doing the little, you know, the bear claw thing. I think of a lot of the folks who are doing it, it would look goofy and corny, but he's the man about town right now. So he's doing it and he's sneering while it's happening and folks are getting on board with that. He's in on it. He's up for it. He's enjoying it. He's not treating himself as being above it. And to me, that was always the bigger point that Jalen Johnson was looking to make. And I believe a big part of the reason, like, yes, Justin Fields had many moments of production here, a number of games of production here too. So that's a part of why the locker room had kind of rallied around him publicly and why the city was getting behind him. But also, he was the public face of the Bears' struggles and the pincushion for it, and him shouldering all of that. That there's a lot that went into how the teammates rallied around Justin Fields in that way, and why a lot of them were hoping months ago that he was going to get the opportunity to now come out the other side of this with him. But he's not here. They're going to be willing to embrace Caleb Williams, but there's a lot of guys who've taken some lumps with this team over the last couple of years that I don't think they're going to expect that the rookie quarterback's going to come in and sort of start to run the show. There's a whole lot of vets who've made a whole lot of money, made a lot of plays for the Bears here in recent seasons, who are going to say, well, yeah, this is our show. Come on board with us. And then at some point, yes, you can take the lead here, but there's a lot of that needs to be earned in locker rooms and on the field. And I think Caleb is going to go about the process of earning that from a respect standpoint.
I also think it's an important discussion given what the Bears passed up on last season. We talk about the locker room being able to handle Jalen Carter and what that would have looked like.
Right.
And then you see what happened in Philly. So I feel like that question is always valid. I'm not saying we hang out in the past 24/7, but we sure as hell better learn from it.
And that you've got a coach who, say what you want about him, is not a great communicator. Not a great speaker, not a great
communicator. At least not with us.
Right.
Maybe and we just talked about Keon Coleman being able to speak freely because the circumstances surrounding an SID approach have changed. Perhaps that is the case with him as well. But I think it's all valid when you're talking about how this is going to fit together.
I wonder what version of Flus we see this season. I wonder if his guard, and I do think there's multiple aspects to what you're referencing there, Dan, because as far as being a great communicator, I don't think he's got the broadest vocabulary of any head coach in the NFL. But I also do think there's an aspect of just getting more comfortable in his own skin as a head coach, as being such here in Chicago. Even down the stretch last season, once they actually won a few games, he was willing to kind of smile and smirk a bit more, get a bit more comfortable in the way he went about communicating. So I don't know. I think there's an evolved version of Matt Eberflus as a communicator specifically. I mean, I think the jury is still going to be out as a head coach. It's a huge season for him from a win-loss perspective. But as far as the comfort with being the front-facing voice of this organization, because as much as we all love hearing from Ryan Poles, as great as he is at the podium, we're now entering the time where we're going to hear from Ryan Poles a lot less, and we're going to hear from Matt Eberflus a lot more. And I do think we're in a space now where Eberflus should end up being as comfortable as he's ever been at the podium addressing things about the Chicago Bears.
If the beard made him look like 5 IQ points smarter, I'm wondering what else can be done to, like, do we get him like a meerschaum pipe or a deer stalker cap or a certain sunglasses or something, or maybe different frames on glasses?
Don't forget the fade. He's got the beard. He got faded up a little bit. It's yep. Like the suave.
It helps.
It helps.
I'm not into objectifying the people I work with. But I will say that he looked all right without those things. Like, the president on Scandal is not a bad person to resemble. Okay?
Oh, is that the comp? Okay, I hadn't thought about that before.
To me, he just started to look like the president from Scandal. But I'm not here to... I feel uneasy talking about people's looks like that I work.
That's fair. That's completely fair.
This is Tony Goldwyn?
Yeah.
You're saying, okay, yeah, the Goldwyn of the Goldwyns. Like, that's of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Is that
exactly.
The guy? Is he Angela Bassett's husband on 911? Is that the same guy?
Let's see. 911 cast. I love that we get to talk about this because the draft was so peaceful.
And this is when it ends when Anthony Heron says he's a crappy actor.
I mean, he's a TV actor. There's a different standard there.
He's been husband in movies? Actor. Come on.
Who was Athena's husband in 911? It was Peter Krause.
Oh, Peter Krause. Yeah.
Oh, is that how you say
pronounced
it?
Pronounced Krause. Yes.
He's I'm sorry,
from
guys.
6 feet under.
Robert Bobby Nash.
And he was also on the, what was the Sports Center one with Felicity Huffman?
Oh, Sports yeah. Night.
Yes, he was on that
Short-lived
as well.
Short-lived Sports Night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anthony Heron, thank you so much. As always, much appreciated.
I appreciate you both.
That's Anthony Heron. Join the Score and Budweiser this Thursday at Harry Carey's Tavern Navy Pier for the 26th annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey. Parkins and Spiegel will be there, broadcasting live from 4 to 7 p.m. with actor and comedian Jason Alexander leading the toast at 5:30. You'll also have a chance to register to win tickets to a future Cubs home game. That's the best, because the ones in the past you can't go to. The Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey is brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you. And you think, well, when do the Cubs play next? Tonight, the Cubs begin a four-game series in New York against the Mets. Pre-game series starts at 5. Pre-game coverage starts at 5:35. First pitch at 6:10. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app.
That's how I listened to the draft over the weekend. And Heron had a pretty good show.
And there's
him and Hub were good. I mean, everyone was good. That's just the one I happened to catch as well.
Great baseball nugget that I caught about one of the hottest team, maybe the hottest team in the game. I believe the Twins have won 7 in a row, and they've got a special secret ingredient to their success. And hearing Rocco Baldelli talk about it is a thing. That's next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
You have to try this sausage.
I do not fear the sausage. Once again.
That's good advice. I think on both counts when it comes to the Minnesota Twins right now, the weird-ass Minnesota Twins have... It's either a home run sausage or a run scoring sausage or an offensive success sausage that they hand to each other. That's what it is. Because I don't think it has to be a home run. I think if they just score runs, they are presented the sausage of offensive success.
I need that in my life.
You know, so maybe, well, we can get you one. If you like, we can go pick one up. And this is manager Rocco Baldelli.
Meet somebody.
Sort of embarrassingly explaining the origins of their celly.
It's a summer tangy sausage is what it is. I actually looked at the package yesterday. It's bringing us a lot of hits and runs and stuff, so I'm all for it. I mean, for anyone that hasn't been following, it's a substantial packaged, you know, sausage that Jeffers has been carrying around in his bag and throwing at people when we score runs and hit homers. So I'm all for it. I'm slightly concerned as like. I'm not even an adult, but slightly concerned as like more of an adult than maybe some of the people in the other room that the package is going to open up and the thing hasn't been refrigerated in many days. And there's no doubt that when that thing opens up, whoever's touching it is in deep trouble. Like that thing is that there's no doubt in my mind that we are carrying around something that is very, very unhealthy to the human body.
Okay, so it made its debut last night. After a Carlos Santana home run, we talked about it, that all of a sudden he was given what looked to be like a big stick of salami. Well, as it turns out, it was a summer sausage, and thanks to that man, Kyle Farmer. And here's Santana last night celebrating, and then look at the toss. That's what he had in his hand.
Gosh.
And that got us wondering, and being that we are credentialed journalists, we had to dig into that one a bit more today. And sure enough, Kyle Farmer had an endorsement deal with the meat company in Mandan last year. And it went so well, then as a thank you, they sent Farmer a care package early this season.
Okay, now here's why Rocco Baldelli, as adorable as that was, why he's wrong. It's a summer sausage. And I'm going to, well, actually, this.
You're taking the fun out of the offensive
success
sausage?
No, I'm putting the fun into it. It is not going, it's not unhealthy.
I don't know about that.
And it's not going to burn. The reason why summer sausages developed and were called summer sausages is it, they could keep without refrigeration. Summer sausages are salt cured and also fermented. And they're often cured. There's often mustard seed in there that gives them that tanginess or a lactic acid culture that's part of the fermentation. That's the point. They can survive unrefrigerated until opening in the summer.
No it's matter- a substantial packaged, you know, sausage.
It's a substantial package. And that's the great thing. They chose exactly the right sausage. I love the venison summer sausage.
But wasn't he saying like he was worried it was going to come out of the wrapper?
He was worried that it was going to explode out of the wrapper because it was going to deteriorate or it was going to get funky or it was. But it's already fermented.
But it will once it's out of the wrapper.
Correct. It must be refrigerated once you've opened the sausage and taken it out of the wrapper. But
it's a substantial packaged, you know, sausage.
I can't believe he kept it together.
Weird ass Minnesota Twins.
I seriously cannot believe he kept that together.
I think it's cool, and now I want
one. He's younger too, and he gets jokes.
Once they open it, make sure you refrigerate it properly. But until then, you're good all summer. That's
so. So it's
all the way through the season.
It's a summer sausage summer for the Twins.
It sure
for the
is.
Twins.
And you know what they should, you know what the best thing for them to do would be keep playing the White Sox.
Well, that's happening tonight at 6:30.
Hey, hater!
Don't even start on that. That was unfortunate. That was just unfortunate. Ill-advised and it's just too bad. Next up, we are going to welcome the Parkins and Spiegel Show, and you are going to go to your all-important meeting that could have been an email.
No, it actually has to be a meeting every day.
Really?
Yeah, it's email would... No.
Okay.
We meet. It's our pre-show meeting, just like we have.
It can't be like the one we have.
No, well, it's not.
Not quite.
No.
But it's Parkins and Spiegel next on the score.
It's a substantial packaged, you know, sausage.
I will be over with my sausage in moments.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.